from Juro, living in Santa Cruz, and this morning focusing on gratitude. last time I spoke here, I think it was, that I gave the story of Sono, this wise Japanese woman who lived out in a village and who had this miserable man came to her and said, "My life is hopeless. What can I do?" And she simply said, "Well, whenever that suffering is coming up for you, just say, thank you for everything. I have no regrets whatsoever." So he said, "Thank you very much, and I'll try that." And so he went away and struggled on with his life and tried to remember what she advised. But his life just kept getting more and more miserable. It was just horrible. No, there's just no solution. So finally he just went back to Sono, this supposedly wise woman, and said, "Well, it just hasn't worked. I appreciated what you advised me, but it just doesn't work. So what shall I do?" And she said, "Thank you for everything. I have no regrets whatsoever." And then, according to the story, he understood. So the story is stayed with me, probably not with any of you, but it stayed with me, and I think I continue to think about gratitude. And so it's been a little bit like the place where gratitude can be, or inevitably is a little bit like in when I was beginning to teach some people who are interested in tea practice, and I was wanting to talk a little bit about the background of tea and so on, ceremonial tea as it's practiced in Japan and a few places here. And one of the aspects of it which is not usually discussed or sometimes is just ignored is the sort of Shinto underpinnings of tea practice. So eventually I said, "Well," because I looked at it more, and I said, "Well, to me, Shinto is the basis or the foundation of tea, and Zen is the agent for it." Because when you study tea or read about it, you always hear about how tea and Zen are the same taste, and then how Zen priests have always been important tea practitioners or teachers and so on. And the official teachers of tea schools always are given the first part of their name is So, which refers to them as a priest, supposedly as a priest. So there's a close connection with Zen, and that's all very well known. But underlying it is the culture of Shinto, which, of course, was in Japan long before Buddhism came. So the particular aspects of Shinto which come out in tea are the concern for purification, purity, and also gratitude, and a rather austere and simple architecture and environment, appreciation of nature and the seasons, and the sense of community as well. That's very strong in Shinto because of their the shrines are always located in different neighborhoods, and the each neighborhood has festivals and so on which are focused at the shrine, and it's a very communal kind of activity which goes on there because of the festivals that are celebrated throughout the year. So if you practice tea, you may never particularly suspect that there's much of a Shinto background, because nobody knows anything about Shinto. There isn't any real theology, and there's no Shinto philosophy, so it's not widely known. But still, it's there underneath it. Then I was also reading someone who was talking about early Japanese history when the first constitution was written by Prince Shotoku in about the 8th century. And it has strong elements of Buddhism and Confucianism, which are cited in the constitution. But this writer was saying that underlying the whole spirit of the constitution is the Shinto culture. So one thing that I have usually said in relation to tea practice is that the sort of success, we can say, of Zen in Japan is that it, in the expression of Japanese culture in tea, it has succeeded in bringing out and expressing the true nature of the Japanese or Japanese culture, which which is this Shinto foundation. So our Zen practice here may also, in a sense, ultimately be functioning as a kind of agent for whatever is our true nature as Americans and Californians and so on. We're not too clear about those things, and we come from different family backgrounds and so on. And then we also realize gradually the Native American underpinnings of the land, sort of the land itself, in a sense. The more that we can deepen into our own nature, which is, of course, profoundly interconnected and interdependent. So it's not something that becomes clearly defined, I think, but we will become more appreciative of what has given rise to where we are now, which includes the Native American Foundation, and then our various Christian or Jewish or Muslim or some other layers which we carry with us. And these things all emerge thanks to the agency of our Zen practice. So, similarly to this sort of whatever it is which is underground, I feel that gratitude also lies deeply, deep below our consciousness, deep within our lives, as they are lived with greater and greater awareness. So, I wrote down a few thoughts in relation to this. In each turning of a key, raising of a cup, each step forward, or blinking of an eye, behind each thought, each beat of the heart, there is, deeply hidden, disguised, gratitude, a form of Dharma, of one's true nature. It comes forth the deeper one lives into profound interconnectedness, while briefly surfing upon this turbulence of being. Joy, sorrow, love, hatred, destruction, renewal, vital health, painful illness, dismay, and delight. In their affirmation or recognition lies the root, the channel to gratitude. Rather than sweet and sugary, gratitude ruthlessly erodes the sense of significant self. The more pervasive our thankfulness, the less necessary we are to ourselves. The starting point is so close, it's hardly seen or felt. So fast it's already gone when thought about. Let gratitude surround each move, gesture, thought, smell, taste, and touch. Each a wonder of being. Each usually overlooked as we go about busily maintaining ourselves all day long. So, without should, but with awareness, let this moment and place return again and again, most gratefully. Any comments or questions?
What is the name of that piece? Is that a poem that you said or something you wrote?
Yeah, I just jotted these down, so no name.
Funny, because I was thinking about gratitude on my way during the break, looking at the sunlight on the ground, realizing, oh, yeah, if you go in that direction, that can be a door to many doors opening, and you actually have that choice by going in that direction.
I'm reminded of a Sufi quote, a Sufi sage who said, abundance can be had simply by embracing that which has already been given. And I worked at Cafe Gratitude when I first got legal in the U.S. I was a hostess there. And it was a pretty amazing practice to have our consciousness continuously directed back towards gratitude. It's really beautiful. I saw a lot of changes happen in my life resulting in myself.
We say thank you all the time. That word thank you, does it necessarily or always express gratitude?
Oh, I doubt it. it expresses, I should say thank you.
Thank you. We use it so, so much, we don't really pay attention to its ground, like you said.
Yeah, I've been interested in that sense that thank you doesn't have to mean also I feel indebted to you as much as it's an expression of affirmation of what has happened, accepting what has happened. There are so many people we are indebted to, and it's unnecessary or it's silly to always try to repay that person, especially appreciating the profound interconnectedness of things. If we as a result of whatever we received are able to pass that on to another place, it may go back to that person but may well go somewhere else, and that's that keeps it flowing and alive.
Especially the part about, I forget exactly how you said it, but gratitude diminishes the sense of self, the sense of significance of the self.
Mm-hmm.
That really resonated when you read that. Oh, yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, it's nice if it happens that way rather than in some more like strong sense of guilt or some other mechanism that we try to use to lose ourselves.
Rather than negative, it's actually leading to a positive. Remember the man's name, famous psychiatrist who wrote The Search for Meaning, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
Viktor Frankl?
What is his name?
Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning?
Yeah, right.
Isn't that Viktor Frankl?
Yeah, exactly. And he writes in the latter part of the book
being in people who've been in concentration and losing all hope, really. And he found that I think there were two things that seemed to people that were able to survive that was meaning of something that they're going to do after they get out. And for him, it was to finish his thesis. And then the other thing was that there was somebody or people waiting for you that you loved and they loved you. Mm. But most of the other people that didn't have these things, they didn't survive, he found. So in the face of all that, you know, I wonder how you would find gratitude. We take it for granted and we can even find it.
In that case, it's a survival mechanism, you could say, almost in that circumstance.
You would think that could be found, though it's. If it was in fact a survival mechanism. Right. If in fact these are basically in general the two things that were able to have a person survive, the survival was to have something in the afterwards that they could look forward to, and that there was somebody or people that they loved on the outside. These two things, I think, were the main things that allowed these people to survive. The survivors, most everybody else perished. So if this is gratitude, could you find it? Maybe be quite gracious to have gratitude, to even have it experience it.
Yeah, I think it's a really deep question, because I've thought, well, sometimes when I have a severe headache, I don't feel grateful for that, and and people suffering, you know, incredible things, what people are suffering always and certainly today, and what is the role of gratitude there? And it's important not to have it, not to feel the should of, I should be grateful for this headache, you know. That's pretty hopeless. But I think that when the thoughts come up of the person who is waiting for me outside, for instance, or that tomorrow I'll be over this headache, those thoughts one can be grateful for. Because we're just having these mental experiences all the time, and some of those that are we can appreciate, we can express gratitude for them, certainly. And I think, I think the thing is that with a deepest form of awareness, I think the gratitude is just there or coming. It's not something that the I does, but it's there, and that's part of this part of what erodes our sense of self, because this sense of living in a sense from whatever else is happening, for which there is appreciation.
I was going to say that this seemed to come down to appreciation and an expanding of opening the person's self and their heart. And that kind of seems to be the key, is that you're moving out, opening in that direction.
Mm.
So you're very much connected to others and the world of the community.
Yeah.
There are so many ways to be grateful. There's also many folks who are in circumstances that they do not need to feel grateful. And they don't. And it causes harm to others. Great harm. And it seems that they don't feel gratitude until their health dissolves.
What was it that dissolves?
Their health dissolves. They suddenly lose their wealth, their fortune. They go on public assistance or whatever, and they just appreciate the orderlies that are taking care of their fundamental needs, and they suddenly lose their, they become grateful. Mm-hmm. They're connected. Mm. But up till then, it's a whole different it's different. Mm.
It makes me think of people who work very hard and are successful and accumulate wealth. And the attitude that I hear from people like that sometimes is a kind of an inverse gratitude, in the sense of I produced all these things. And you might not perceive the need for gratitude because it was all your effort. That it's these things are all merited based on your own effort. And so when things are taken outside of your control, you know, maybe you're forced into a sense of feeling gratitude. If the rest of that thought comes to me, I'll share it.
Relating to Phoenix Todd, right? And Todd was saying about Viktor Frankl, and that seems like it's one end of the spectrum, and then what Doug and Jonathan are sharing seems like the other end of the spectrum. And Viktor Frankl was a great inspiration to me when I was in sort of a long decline of the soul myself. And my favorite quote of his is, "What is to give light must first endure burning." My favorite quote of his is, "What is to give light must first endure burning." Mm-hmm. And so that's just kind of been something that always stayed with me. And I think that in that experience for him, there was probably such an incredible surrendering of mental hindrances, because at a certain point at that level of suffering, I think that the mind probably just sort of collapses upon itself and there's nothing left to be thought, you know? But in that process, there was probably this incredible stoking of the spiritual fire, you know, and probably an amazing awakening of his heart that happened resulting from that kind of pain and suffering. And I think that that can often be the gift of really extreme suffering, and I think that that was something that he realized in his experience. And I liked what you said too about gratitude being something that's really ultimately experiential and not mental. You know, I found myself lying in bed at Jokoji, staring up at the ceilings and just being like, "Whoa, it doesn't get any better than this." You know, it's like there's just such a sense of beauty, and then I open my door and there's deer and turkeys and like this incredible wilderness, and you can feel this sacredness of the land, and that the animals feel comfortable. They're just like, they walk amongst us, you know? And so I've just been awash in gratitude since I got here. And then on Facebook this morning, I saw a post that basically said that in November, they're talking about doing some stuff with the nuclear reactor plants for Fukushima that could potentially result in a nuclear disaster 85 times out of Chernobyl. And then I found myself reflecting, you know, in a way that was kind of more, at this point, like feeling like licking honey from the razor's edge on how imminent potential disaster can actually be, and how that also throws us into, you know, a similar place that people wind up with in when they are facing major health challenges. You know, recognizing, wow, amazing, I'm at Chikoji, it's the end of September. Come November, we may have all our windows sealed and not be able to go outside, you know. So that also, like, so much right here, right now.
Well, I remember when I was in my 20s, you know, I was entitled to all these things that never happened, and just those days seemed more difficult. And then later, one day, I went into the hospital, and they said, if you make it through the next hour, you'll be all right. In that statement, so the next day when I walked out of the hospital, I was, that day I wasn't entitled to. That day was different. And these days are different. And now as I age, you know, I always, the time goes faster and things are more beautiful. And it just seems that there's something about the recognizing the ephemeral nature of things, like you do in tea, just cultivates gratitude. What can you say about that?
Yeah, what can you say about it?
Enjoy your tea.